Hi, you're listening to my favourite Elliott Smith song. In this podcast, we try, in our own very small way, to keep Elliott Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. So welcome to our final episode of our second season. As this will be our last one for a little while, we've got a packed-out lineup for you today. First, we'll hear from the musician Fen Lily, who's going to talk us through her favourite Elliott Smith song. Then we'll delve into the My Favourite Elliott Smith Song archives, which is essentially just a folder on my iCloud. And we'll pick out a couple of stories from our Season 1, Episode 6 interview with Ross Harris, who directed the video for Fen's pick. And then to round this all off, we have a very special listener pick for you, because we're joined by someone we are absolutely honoured to call a listener to this podcast. Charlie Ramirez, the founder of SweetAdeline.net, the Elliott Smith website for fans. But before we get into all of that, let's go to Fen Lily. Fen is a musician based in Bristol here in the UK. Her first album, On Hold, was released in April 2018 and has since become a huge success online, amassing more than 100 million streams. Fen's currently preparing to release her second record and kindly took some time out to speak to us about her favourite Elliott Smith song and a few other Elliott-related things besides. So here's the conversation I recorded with Fen. And just to warn those of you who aren't familiar, Fen picked a song which has two relatively well-known recorded versions. Hopefully it's not too confusing when we flip from talking about one version to the other, but I just wanted to let you know before we play the interview. So here she is, here's Fen Lily.
Hello, I am Fen Lily. My favourite Elliott Smith song at the moment is Miss Misery, either version.
I'll fake it through the day with some help from Johnny Walker Red. Send the poison rain down the drain to put bad thoughts in my head.
I picked this song because I've been thinking a lot recently about how to write a song about a feeling without naming someone or kind of giving another person's actions credit for your own emotions. And I think this song, I'm not sure whether Miss Misery is a person or a feeling personified, but I think that's something that Elliott Smith uses as a device in a lot of songs, but this one particularly is tangible and confusing, but beautiful.
Two tickets torn in half and a lot, and nothing to do. Do you miss me? Miss misery like you say you do.
The struggle for me as a songwriter is that sad songs often are linked to heartbreak or somebody doing something to someone else. So being dumped or being treated like shit or whatever. And I think often the case is that a relationship or an event precipitates a feeling towards yourself that maybe doesn't get represented as much as the anger or frustration or feeling of being left behind. And sometimes writing about a person is painful because you have to remind yourself that that person has affected you or even been around in the first place. So it's something that he does really well that I haven't mastered and maybe never will, is blurring the line between himself and the people that he writes about. Maybe he's not ever writing about a person, and it doesn't seem to affect the feeling that you get when you listen to his music. You still feel the sadness and the introspection that comes with the territory of writing heartbreak songs or songs of loss. He just does it in a more abstract way, and I can't do that. And I wish that I could, but I'm trying.
You said you're not sure, you weren't quite sure whether Miss Misery is a person or a feeling. Do you lean one way or the other, or does it really just not matter whether you have like an actual idea of whether it is or it isn't?
A, I don't really think it matters, and B, I personally like to think that it isn't a real person. I know that the like acoustic version that was on New Moon, he alludes to the fact that it may actually be a woman. But I first heard the version that is in Good Will Hunting, so I've become attached to the lyrics that suggest that it's just a lurking depression or like a sense of self-hatred that just sneaks in and then he can move away from, but it's always there. But yeah, I don't really think it matters what a song is about. And I think sometimes it ruins a song to know what it's about. And I try to avoid over-explaining my songs, and I really appreciate it when artists let you make up your own mind.
Men in the park read the lines in my head, told me I'm strong, hardly ever wrong. I said, man, you mean you had plans for both of us that involved a trip out of town to a place I seen in a magazine that you left lying around.
I mean, firstly, I love any song that mentions like a cigarette brand or like a beer or a whiskey as if it's a friend. So the opening line, instantly I was like, this is something that I'm going to enjoy. I'll fake it through the day. I'm going to misquote it now. With help from Johnny Walker, Red. I think that's so sick. And yeah, the lyrics are the main thing for me, the main draw. And I think that's what I like most about his music and maybe just music in general. But also the instrumentation is so interesting in the song because it starts with him on his own and then suddenly all these like white album guitars come in, and it doesn't affect the feeling that he's singing to directly to you, but it makes for a joyful song with a really crippling topic. And yeah, like similar to Nick Drake, he's just like, if you were just listening in a car or like in a shop, you might like tap your foot. I don't know if anyone still taps their foot. Maybe a Victorian would tap their foot. But yeah, he's managed to make a bop, in inverted commas, that also makes me wish I hadn't heard it because it makes me sad again. And I've just got to a point where I'm not sad. But yeah, that guitar sound is just that like woozy kind of descending weird sequence of that comes in the second chorus is so sick, or the second verse is so sick. I'm so happy that there's two lyrical versions of this because the melody itself is enough to make me wish that I'd written it. And then to have two totally different approaches to the same melody from the same writer is something that you don't get. And I think that we as music fans should be campaigning for more writers to write alternate versions of songs so that we can, like, I don't know, chop and change between them, because the lyrics on that, yeah, as I said, he kind of makes Miss Misery into more of a person, and it's heartbreaking. It's so much more, I don't know, intimate and I guess easy to digest because it's more of a like relationship vibe. But I love the way the song builds in the album version. And yeah, don't ask me to pick a favorite.
If you had to.
Oh, you are asking me to pick a favorite?
You brought it up and I felt like I had to go in there.
I mean, I think based on the fact that I think it's a really rare skill to be able to command people's ears and make people feel things with just a guitar and a voice, I think I'll have to if you're asking, I have to go for the acoustic one, but yeah, both are sick. I mean, I don't want to keep talking about the previous version, but there was a line in it that's something like, I can't hold my liquor, but I keep a good attitude. And it's that like weird kind of black humor that you wouldn't expect from someone that gets a reputation, got a reputation for being just like this really miserable dude. And there are definitely some like funny parts of this song that you don't immediately notice, like the palm reader in the park saying that he's strong and hardly ever wrong. I wish someone would say that about me.
We can't really talk about Miss Misery without talking about the Oscars and the Oscars performance.
Absolutely. It's the white suit is something I wish I could pull off. I don't think I can. Maybe I won't even try now. So good. But yeah, that performance is so brilliant. And I don't know if those strings were added afterwards. There's these like orchestral ornaments in there. I'm not sure if that was live. But at the end, is it Madonna that's hosting it? I feel like it is. And at the end of his performance, they like get all the nominees out. And she goes through like who's been nominated, what songs have been nominated for the award. And then she goes, and the winner is, and she pulls the piece of paper out of the envelope and laughs and goes, oh, like something like, no surprises here. And then says that it's the fucking Titanic song. And I like to think that Madonna wanted Elliot Smith to get that award. You'd rather see me gone than to see me the way that I am, that I am in the life anyway.
Did you hear the Good Will Hunting version? Did you hear that for the first time in the film, or did you hear it another way?
I actually can't remember. I think probably in the film. I watched it really like ages ago. But recently I watched that scene back because I was revisiting Elliot's stuff and going through interviews and stuff, and it just popped up. And the line before the song starts playing in the film is like Robin Williams being like, son of a bitch, he stole my line, and he's just said he's got to go see about a girl or something. And then the song kicks in and it's like, how perfect is that pairing of like of this music and this sentiment of like putting everything down and falling like completely into something that your heart has picked for you. I don't know, just yeah, I don't know who was in charge of scoring that film, but they did a good job. This is maybe going to be an unpopular thing to say, but I came pretty late to his stuff and honestly felt a tiny bit of like art envy and jealousy in terms of like when you're trying to do something and you're not very good at it, sometimes the worst thing is to look at someone who's like doing it the best that it can possibly be done and trying to like hang your... I was going to say hang your coat on that hook. I don't know where all these Edwardian comparisons are coming from today. But yeah, I listened to Roman Candle a lot. And when I did my first tour, I only downloaded like 10 records and that was one of them. Yeah, but retrospectively, if I could tell my younger self to, like if I could give myself some advice, it would be to listen to better music when I was writing my first songs. Because when I was 15, I was literally just listening to whatever NME told me to listen to. And I regret not really delving into not only like the songs that people have crafted, but the worlds through albums. Like I think apart from the fact that people on the surface will know Elliot Smith as someone who writes beautiful, sad songs and they can maybe name a few, the way he puts a record together is an art form in itself, and I wished that I had paid more attention to that. As someone who didn't have a band and didn't really have any wish to perform to anyone apart from myself at the beginning, his music gave me permission to be introspective and be quiet and not write with an audience in mind. And that's something that he does so well. And I've tried to keep that in mind when it comes to writing a second record and then eventually a third record, trying to keep the original reason behind why I started writing, that I learned from people like Elliot Smith and like Joni Mitchell. Like, they can perform their songs just a guitar and a person, and I want to keep being able to do that, because the power behind that is so big, and the temptation to get like a big band on board and like add loads of unnecessary shit to a track or a record is tempting. But I'll always go back to his records as testament to the fact that it's not essential to over analyze and overwork a really like raw, simple idea.
Try to be, but you know me, I come back when you want me to. Do you miss me? Miss misery, like you say to me.
Thank you very much then to Fenlily for being a guest on my favourite Elliot Smith song. And when Fen told me the song she wanted to speak about, I immediately thought back to our interview with Ross Harris way back in episode 6 of season 1. Ross directed the video for Miss Misery, which has Elliot walking down the street in that now infamous white suit being followed by a police officer. And I remembered we left a couple of bits out of that episode when we put it together, because we just had so much material with Ross at the time. So I thought this would be the perfect opportunity to play a couple of clips of Ross talking about the video for Miss Misery. First, here he is talking about how he ended up working with Elliot on it.
I hadn't seen Elliot for a little bit. You know, his career, you know, started to really take off and he was very busy. He moved to New York for a little bit, and I hadn't seen him. And then also I had kind of not really pursued, you know, video making. I got more into music production, and so I wasn't really doing it as much. And then I ran into Elliot at a bar in Los Angeles, and you know, we were getting, you know, catching up and asking each other about what we've been up to. And he goes, "Oh, you know, I have to do a video for this song, for this movie that I did, and they really want a music video, and I want you to do it because I trust you to, you know, I don't like these big video director guys. I don't, you know, I don't trust what they'll want me to do." And it was really interesting because, like, he was asking me to shoot this video for this big movie that had just come out, and it was almost like his tone was like he was asking me to help him move a refrigerator or something, you know, like I was doing this tremendous favor for him. And this is why I like to do these interviews, is I really want to get across to people that that's the level of sincerity and genuineness that Elliot had. It wasn't a show. He really, you know, He was that was who he was.
And then this is how Ross says the policeman in the video became involved.
We were waiting for the camera or something, and we saw them, you know, they always on the shoots that, you know, are permitted. Most of my shoots, we just go out and run and we don't get permits to do anything. But on this, we've gotten permits. And whenever you do that, they send two LA, like retired LA motorcycle cops to kind of control traffic. And there was this one police officer that was sitting on his bike, and he just looked so typical of an American motorcycle police officer, almost to where it was a caricature. And we were just giggling, going, wow, could this guy be any more, look more like a police officer? And I said, what if he's following you down just everywhere you go? At this point, my video idea was, I went back to what worked before, is don't have a video idea. And this time it was really difficult because they're spending money on this video, at least a little bit of money. It was nothing to them, but it was, significant nonetheless for us. But I wanted it that way because I wanted to be able to get on set with Elliot. And even though I had a crew now and it wasn't just us out of my station wagon with the Super 8 camera, I wanted to leave that open to where for us to make a discovery. And right off the bat, we were like, we should have this police officer follow you. And we actually asked him to follow him down the sidewalk on his motorcycle. and he's like, I can't do that. He's like, but I can follow him on foot. And in retrospect, that's good. That would have been a little beyond the pale for him to be actually on the motorcycle. But yeah, we just asked him. He's like, yeah, okay. Yeah, believe me, I've followed guys like you before. This won't be acting for me.
If you want to hear more from Ross, then I do recommend checking out episode 6 from our first series, as he's got lots more great stories about the time he spent with Elliot. So we'll now finish this episode on something quite special. Over the course of this season, we've been asking you to send in clips telling us what your favourite Elliot Smith song is, and we've had so many fantastic entries. But to round off this season, we thought it would be a good idea to do something slightly different and turn to someone who is arguably almost the ultimate Elliot Smith fan, and someone we're honoured to call a listener as well. Charlie Ramirez is the founder of the website sweetadeline.net, which, if you haven't been on there, is an amazing resource for anyone interested in Elliot Smith. In this chat we'll play now, we talk to Charlie about his pick for his favourite song, and he kindly shares a few of his own Elliot stories too.
Hi, my name is Charlie Ramirez, and I started the Elliot Smith fan site, sweetadeline.net. And my favorite Elliot Smith song is Angelus. I chose Angelus because it's actually the first song I ever heard from Elliot. I was introduced to the song and Elliot through Gus Van Sant's Good Will Hunting soundtrack after seeing his movie. Kind of a funny story is that Angelus sounded like Angela, and that's somebody that I dated at the time of the release of the movie, and that actually helped in a way to look more into Elliot. But not only that, but it was more that the music itself had this really cool tone that as a Beatles fan and as a big White Album fan, I felt like it had a lot of similarities music-wise and tone-wise to like songs like Long, Long, Long and other songs that were acoustic-based off the White Album. So from that moment on, I actually used to work at a bookstore, and they had the soundtrack on the listening station, and I ended up checking it out. And obviously, it wasn't Angela who the track was called, but it was Angelus. And from there, I got to hear Miss Misery and Between the Bars and No Name songs and a lot of great tracks on the soundtrack that started my addiction to listening to Elliot.
So how did you come to start Sweet Adeline?
So when I became a fan, there was a really great fan who was really into Elliot as well. His name is Casey, and he created a site called Skylash, and as I was becoming a fan, he was updating his site with news. And I was also a part of a group on Yahoo. It was like a mailing list, and so we were getting a good number of content from the mailing list. But Casey, unfortunately, was kind of fading off, or wasn't updating the site as much as news was coming out. And so at the time, I was really interested in building websites. I had done a comic book one before, but the community was not great or supportive. So, but in the Elliott community, they were really supportive. And especially Casey, and I made my little site. I didn't have a name at the time, and I said, you know, I would like to kind of continue what you're doing, and I asked him if, you know, I was trying to be a gentleman and ask him if it was okay if I had my site, and he went up and did more than I could ever expect, which was he pushed his site down to advertise my site and say, hey, go check out Charlie's site, and he'll be updating it. And from there, you know, I reached out to other fans to help, and especially on the tablature side of things, because fiddle around with the guitar, I'm not so great still, but it's still, it grew to be something bigger than I could imagine, I guess.
And to a certain extent, you kind of confirmed the news of Elliott's death, didn't you? Can you just tell us how that came about?
It was kind of a weird day. Someone had actually, around 12 o'clock that day, had called me, or not called me, emailed me and like told me that basically sending console came through, basically saying sorry about what happened to Elliott with no details. And it's happened before that somebody would say something like that, so I kind of blew it off, you know. But as the day went on, especially more into the afternoon, I was actually having dinner with friends, and the DreamWorks representatives were kind of reaching out on our discussion board looking for me, and had few friends who knew me personally and knew my phone number, and they started calling, but I was being polite and didn't answer the phone. And but it was just getting overwhelming. So I finally picked up, and someone from work, actually, they went as far as calling my work to try to reach me. And so I knew something was up, so I left. And I went home, and I ended up talking to DreamWorks. And at first, Luke Wood, who was Elliott's A&R guy, was the one who got on the phone with me and asked me if I had heard what had happened. And I said no, but I'm kind of getting a feeling I know what happened in general. And he talked to me a little bit about it, not many specifics, but what to do, because at the time, Sweet Adeline was the place, I guess, to announce it. And so they discussed it between the family and I believe Jennifer too, and got back to me and basically said to go ahead and write whatever I wanted to write. Might have write it too personal. and it, you know, it might not come off as a new story, but more of a personal experience for me. But I pretty much hid the website and wrote a long statement about my experience and with Elliott and what he meant to me.
Did you ever meet Elliott when he was still alive?
I was lucky enough through Elliott's manager, Margaret, to kind of have moments where I got backstage passes and to come and visit with him and say hi. And he was very welcoming, and I got, a few more opportunities to go in and spend time with him backstage and talk and just hang out. And he was so generous. He was just really nice with me and the time that he gave me. He was even nice enough to call me one time it was related to being the website becoming the official site. But it was kind of between us, so nobody outside of Elliot and I and Jennifer that really knew that that's what he wanted for the site to become the official site for him. So, of course, right now it's not the official site, but that was the intention, but it's okay. I think the idea that that it was a community kind of thing where people contribute to the website, I think that was like, he was appreciative of that, and he was appreciative that we put a lot into posting about what he was doing, what he was working on. You know, even there was one point on a discussion board, he was on tour in San Francisco, and he hung out in there, was talking with fans, and just for a little bit. But the feedback that I got from his family, his friends, about what he thought about the site and what he thought about me was very comforting and great and loving, and it was really awesome.
So thank you very much to Charlie for taking part in the podcast. It was a huge pleasure having him on. And that's pretty much it for today and for this series as well. A massive thank you to you for listening to the show, for telling us about your favourite Elliott Smith songs, and for doing your bit to spread the word over the course of this season. It's been a real privilege doing the podcast, and it's always fun chatting on email and social media, and even in person for those of you Elizabeth and I have been lucky enough to meet. We'll take a few months off now, and we'll be back with a new series later on in the year. We'll announce all of that on social media when we have more confirmation on dates, so do look out for that if you can. In the meantime, just keep listening to Elliot, keep doing your bit to keep his legacy alive, and of course, feel free to get in touch with us if you have any suggestions for the next series. So that's it for now. Thanks once again for listening to the show. Thank you to all of our guests over the course of this season, and thank you to Elizabeth Wood-Stanley for producing this podcast with me. We'll see you in a bit.